Hello and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway and I'm studying the myths and religions of the world and looking for inspiration for fantasy role-playing games. In today's episode, we are continuing our series about Haitian voodoo. And today we're going to take a look at long last at two of the loa, the deities or spirits that are at the center of voodoo practice. Now the first loa that we're going to look at in detail is Legba. I've chosen Papa Legba to be first on our list, not because he's the most important of loa, as we saw last episode, there isn't really a most important, but because he is the first. Not the first in terms of like the history of loa, but the first in terms of their worship. One of the first anyway. By this I mean that Legba is usually invoked at the beginning of a voodoo rite or celebration, because he is the loa who connects humanity with the other loa, or perhaps we might say he permits humanity to connect to the other loa. He is a guardian of crossroads and doorways, and as a consequence, he's the sort of doorkeeper of the spiritual world. In Mama Lola, Karen McCarthy Brown records a ceremony that begins with a dance accompanying a song that entreats Legba to open the gate to the world of loa, the spiritual world. And the lyrics go, Papa Legba, ouvri barrière, ouvri barrière, atibon, pour nous passer là. So, I mean, if you speak French, you know, my pronunciation is probably wrong, but if you speak French, you can probably figure out what it's saying there. It says, Papa Legba, open the barrier, atibon. Atibon is another name for Legba. He's often addressed as Atibon Legba. And then, pour nous passer là, so for us to pass it. For us to pass through. So a very simple prayer to Legba, asking him to open the barrier that separates the world of mortals from the world of loa. And Legba often has like a particular shrine within a honfo that is, you know, the first one to be decorated or the first one to be given offerings prior to a ceremony. So in the household that Karen McCarthy Brown was reporting on, there was a specific door to his shrine, which is in like a separate room from the rest of the shrines. And you had to open that door with the proper offerings and rites prior to the start of the main festival. And on one occasion, for various reasons, basically to do with the household that, you know, this is a shrine that was in someone's home and, you know, things had just gotten a little confusing and everybody thought everybody else was supposed to do it and it was forgotten. And when that happened, Legba manifested. He rode the officiating mambo to complain about how he had been neglected, and only when the proper offerings were made and, you know, he'd been apologized to, was the ceremony allowed to continue. Now, Legba in general is not much of a complainer. He's an old man. One of his most common symbols is a cane or walking stick. If you look at the veve for Legba, veves are geometric art that represents the loa. They're often painted on the floor of the honfo, and they're quite complex, and there are sort of some hongan or mambo are very respected for their ability to like do these precise images very quickly. Anyway, Legba's is almost symmetrical, except that there is a slight difference on the right side, partly to do with like the end of the quote-unquote arm of the design, and then also that arm, as it were, is holding a crutch or a cane. So Legba's most common symbol is his cane or walking stick. He also smokes a pipe, which again is something that you would maybe expect from an older character, and he wears a straw hat, which is something that we'll see with other loa. I think, again, something that's associated with older men, but it's something that we're going to see with the peasant loa, Cousin Zaka. He's called Papa Legba, so there's some respect for his age. And I think most of the time he seems like quite a nice old man. I found one source that said he is often like given care of children, which is a responsibility that, you know, an older man might have, or like, you know, we're leaving the kids with grandpa while we finish the rest of this voodoo ceremony. That was a site that was about voodoo practice in North America, and the specifically that kind of like Louisiana voodoo, which is often spelled with the four O's, is different enough from Haitian voodoo that I didn't want to just say, well, this is an aspect of Legba, but it was an image that I thought was interesting. Now, as we've discussed previously, voodoo loa are often associated with Catholic saints, and specifically, as you might expect, he's associated with Saint Peter, the keeper of the gates of heaven. But another one is Saint Lazarus. Now, this took me a moment to figure out, and I am not sure that this interpretation is right. This is just what I think, so bear with me. So St. Lazarus, as you know, venerated by the Catholic Church, that's Lazarus of Bethany, the brother of Mary and Martha, whom Jesus raises from the dead in the Gospel of John. Why a character like that would be associated with Papa Legba, I'm not sure, although I do note that, like, one place where he's considered particularly important is Cuba, so there's, like, a Caribbean connection, but that's pretty, you know, that's pretty distant. Except, Lazarus of Bethany is sometimes conflated with the other Lazarus in the Bible, right? That's the beggar Lazarus from the Gospel of Luke, the story of Dives and Lazarus. So in that story, Lazarus is a beggar who sits outside the door of a rich man. And the rich man has everything in life, but when he dies, he goes to his punishment, and then Lazarus has a hard life, but you get the picture. Anyway, indeed, those two Lazari don't overlap, right? Lazarus the beggar isn't in John, Lazarus of Bethany isn't in Luke. And there's this thing in the Middle Ages where the two kind of get combined. So you get these images of St. Lazarus being associated with doorways, like cathedral doorways. So there's art of St. Lazarus on, like, cathedral portals, and that may be because Lazarus the beggar slept outside the door of the rich man, but, like, now here he is on the door of the house of God. I don't know. Anyway, he's associated with St. Lazarus. Is it because Lazarus the beggar walks with a crutch? I don't know. Anyway, I think that the key thing here is that Legba is the Lwa who governs contact with other Lwa, and he's not the only standard part of the opening of a voodoo ceremony. And indeed, he's not necessarily the first part, he's just the first Lwa, because he usually be preceded by prayers to God, to Bon Dieu, and there are other figures or spirits or Lwa that are invoked in that same opening part. So no matter what the main part of the ceremony is going to look like, the introductory part includes these invocations to Papa Legba. So this is something that is not that uncommon in real-world religion, but not very common in RPGs, that there is a god whose whole role is to mediate human contact with the world of the divine. And I understand why that doesn't exist in something like D&D, which is that in the world of D&D, gods kind of proceed from clerics, right? The thing that gods are there for is to give clerics something to be priests of, and that deity would be quite a dull thing to be a priest of. It's present in Glorantha, but I don't think it really gets focused on very much, since the connection between the deity that the character is initiated to and the character is so important both to the personality of the character and to the mechanics that it tends to really take center stage. So if you worship Humacht or Stormbull, then being a Humachti or a Stormbull is kind of your thing, and it doesn't really matter that when you participate in ceremonies of your clan, you always start by invoking the good gods, Hant, Heort, and Hara. Although, off the top of my head, I believe, don't quote me, that Hant, Heort, and Hara are not allowing communication from the other side. They're shielding the practitioners of the rite from, like, negative spiritual influences. But the same thing, that they have this, like, opening function. Now, that's not to say that you can't get into contact with the Lwa without Legba's intervention. There are ways to do that, and we've seen some of them in the previous episode. But if I had to generalize, I would say that those seem more like ways that they get in touch with you. So having these routines, these universalities, these ways in which, you know, you call on the gods no matter which ones, you know, no matter what type of rite you're doing, you always start by talking to this figure, I think it helps build a sense of the setting, and it gives you a kind of ritual feeling in divine interactions, which in RPGs, divine interactions don't always otherwise have. Also, Legba's association with Crossroads means that some critics have associated him with the idea of Crossroads as places of power. I say critics, some scholars, right? Have associated him with the idea of Crossroads as places of power in African-American magical traditions. So, like, Robert Johnson selling his soul to the devil at a crossroads in order to become a great guitarist. It's even been a suggestion that Legba is this figure who is sometimes referred to as the devil, which is like a Christianization of this concept. Maybe that's true. Or maybe the understanding of the devil in folk Christianity is much more varied than you would expect from the devil's relatively limited appearance in the Bible. Anyway, because Legba is a god of roads and gates, he has also been identified as a communicator, as a talking god, and thus important to the internet. So we can see the voodoo stuff in William Gibson's sprawl books, and Legba is particularly important. Also, if you're listening to this as it comes out, you may be listening to it on Papa Legba's feast day, which is the 13th of June. Okay, so that's Legba, the first Lwa to be invoked in a voodoo ceremony, and therefore the first Lwa to appear on this show. My next choice, I feel, is almost not much of a choice. We're going to talk about the most famous of the voodoo Lwa, Bawon Samdi. this is the big name, right? I mean, I think when you think of Haitian voodoo, this is probably the first Loi that comes to mind, and I don't blame you. He's probably the best known Loi. He's one of the villains in a James Bond film. He's the obvious inspiration for a Disney villain, Dr. Facilier in The Princess and the Frog. He was associated with the cult of personality surrounding former Haitian dictator Papa Doc Duvalier. And he has a powerful visual design that evokes mourning dress, that gives him a link to goth fashion. He can be anything from terrifying to cool, and consequently, pop culture loves him. I think there's a good number of people who could not name any other voodoo Loi who could tell you who Bamosamdi is, or at least if you said, hey, do you know what Bamosamdi, the voodoo god of death, looks like? They would say, oh yeah, he's a man with a skull-painted face, or he's a skeleton in a top hat, and they might mention that he has sunglasses. And of course, because he's spooky and deathy, he gets associated with all the negative stereotypes that people have about Haitian voodoo, like voodoo dolls and zombies. Have you noticed that, by the way? We are 4 episodes into a series about voodoo, and I haven't talked about zombies once. So there are several reasons for that, but honestly, one of them is that they're just not as big a deal in voodoo as the media would like them to be. I'm not saying people don't believe in them, or that it's not part of the belief system, because it is, but it's not a huge part of it. Whereas I think if you're, you know, outside of Haiti or religion nerds, if you say voodoo to a lot of people, the first thing they think of is zombies. Anyway, because of its representation in Western media, voodoo has this reputation for being dark and sinister, so who better to embody it in that Western media than this dark and sinister character? Which is kind of a shame, because Samdi and his family of spirits, the Gede, are interesting. It's a complex subject, and I'm a student, not an expert. But here's like a rough pressy. So the Gede collectively, and I may be mispronouncing that, are a Fomi of Loi who deal with death and the dead. And those functions can range from being psychopomps, leading the souls of the dead into the afterlife, to being protectors of cemeteries, to all the usual protective and healing abilities you might get from a Loi. So Bamosamdi, for instance, is prayed to for healing because his association with death means that he's seen as having like power in extreme cases. Like if someone is going to die unless they receive healing, well, as the person who decides, you know, who lives and who dies, Samdi can be invoked. There are lots of different Gede, and we'll talk about some of them individually later on. Two in particular, Bamosamdi's wife, Maman Brigitte, and someone who is either an individual character or an aspect of Bamon, and that's Criminel. But they all tend to have different functions that are associated with death or the dead, like I said. So for instance, Papa Gede leads souls into the afterlife. Gede Nibo speaks on behalf of like victims of violence, especially people whose bodies haven't been found. And therefore, because like the proper ceremonies can't be performed, like their souls are wandering, so Nibo can help with that. Brave Gede is the watchman of the graveyard, but having said that, I also found an article that treats Gede Nibo and Brave Gede as the same character, right? So there's Brave Gede Nibo. So I don't know which of these interpretations is right, or even if, as I suspect, there just isn't any one right interpretation, but hopefully I'm getting the picture across that there are a lot of Gede and they're pretty similar to each other. I think, I speak subject to correction, but I think that the point is the multiplicity, that the Gede are often thought of as a collective. They often function as a kind of chorus or set of helpers for Bamosamdi, and exactly which one is which might not be super important. Now, I've been speaking as if Bamosamdi was one of the Gede, and I think that that's up in the air. He's their leader, but is that the same thing as being one of them? It's a bit like if they were a band. Is Bob Marley a whaler? Is Buddy Holly a cricket? Is it Bamosamdi and the Gede? Or is it the Gede and it's just like Bamosamdi is their charismatic frontman? A difficult question to resolve, maybe not one that can be resolved. And to confuse matters further, the Gede all dress like Bamosamdi. They all look pretty much the same. They're all kind of in mourning clothes. So to identify which one is which, you need to be quite alert to the small differences in their sort of ritual garb. Having said that, some of them are a little bit more distinctive. So they don't all dress identically, but many of them dress similarly to Bamosamdi. And in addition to that, Bamosamdi himself has different aspects, or perhaps I should say that Bamosamdi is just one aspect of a larger Bamon character, each of which is associated with a different part of death and commemoration. So for instance, we talked about Bamosamdi, the Lord of the Cemetery, Then we have Baon Lakwa, who's associated with the gravestone or monument. And then Baon Cimetière is associated with the grave itself. And you may be saying, but James, cimetière means cemetery. Why is cimetière not the lord of the cemetery? I don't know. He just isn't. I've seen sources that include criminel in the number of Baons. And others that say, no, he's not an aspect of Baon Samedi. He's just one of the Gede, and he may be Nebo's brother. He may be the one who killed Nebo. Maybe it's a Cain and Abel type situation, because Nebo is the first person to be murdered, and Criminel is the first murderer, so it would seem to add up. Anyway, within a cemetery, the grave of the first man to be buried there is often called the Baon grave, and a particularly large, and not particularly ornate, although it's often decorated, like people will add decorations to a plain, you know, stone cross over that grave is called the Croix Baon, the Baron's Cross, or the Cross of the Baron. One thing that I think is really interesting about Baon Samedi is that his personality is quite different from what you would expect. So from his appearance, it would seem that Baon would be quite morbid and a little bit intimidating, but that isn't really right. I keep saying Baon. He's often referred to that way, as though Baon were his first name instead of a title. Anyway, Baon Samedi is rude and transgressive, but also sort of charming and funny. He likes smoking, drinking, and chasing girls, and he's particularly notable for using filthy language and telling dirty jokes. The Gede as a whole are like this, and I've seen one description of them that says that the Gede are like Baon Samedi in their personality, except for the bit where they're charming. So, Baon Samedi, and I get like Papa Gede is meant to be likable, but like Baon Samedi is rude, crude, foul-mouthed, transgressive, but also kind of like rakishly charming. And then the other ones are just a bunch of hooligans. Not sure why that is. It's also the case that the characteristic dance associated with the Gede, so different groups of Loa have different dances or different songs, that are different sort of hymns that are associated with them. And the characteristic dance of the Gede, the Banda, is seen as particularly sexual. So is this a life in the midst of death thing? Maybe, right? That the Gede remind us of death, and therefore we celebrate life through sexuality and like the earthy reality of life rather than the more civilized illusions? I don't know. Now look, here's the thing. The pop culturization of Baon Samedi is something that I feel like is kind of inevitable given the no centralized control element of voodoo. Like this material, whether you like it or not, is out there. This is not particularly, you know, this is an esoteric initiatory religion, but its outward rites and things are quite public. You don't really get into the esoteric stuff until you want to take it really seriously. You're the average lay worshiper doesn't have to deal with that stuff. Consequently, people are going to take this stuff and put it in pop culture. And I think it's unfortunate that it presents this kind of like cartoonish, oversimplified version of the Loa, but more importantly, that people assume that that's sort of what things are really like. That being said, there are some aspects of it that I think just are so great that they need to be pointed out. So for example, Baon wears a pair of sunglasses with one lens missing. This is often interpreted as representing his ability to see into the worlds of both the living and the dead, and it also rules. I'm sure we've seen this before, but I like the idea of a character having one eye that's like taking a character's sort of psychic abilities or magical abilities and mapping them to parts of the physical body. I think are really interesting. I also read an article that suggested that the Baon, specifically like what makes a Baon like Baon Lakwa or Baon Cimetière or even Baon Criminel, this interpretation of criminal, a Baon rather than just like some other kind of Gede, is that they act essentially as judges, which is interesting because I don't think you would say that Baon Samedi has like a judge-like personality particularly. So if I were going to take Baon Samedi and put him in a role-playing game, honestly, I would not put Baon Samedi in a recognizable form because there's a double-edged sword when you have a deity like this who is so recognizable. So on the one hand, it's accessible, but on the other hand, it's obvious. And maybe it's just me. I tend to have a strong fear of like having my influences seen. I don't like it when people go, oh, just like Baon Samedi or whatever, you know what I mean? And I think that Baon Samedi is the guy that everybody knows who he is. So, but I do like the idea of having a death god in your game who has a very un-death god-like personality, or deities in general having personalities outside their themes. I think the takeaway here is that a lot of Loa have personalities that are outside their themes. Baon isn't gloomy and weird because he's a death god. He's rude, crude, fun-loving party animal. But the fact that he's a death god puts a kind of weird twist on his fun-loving rascal slash insult comic persona. And it reinforces the idea that the Loa are not defined by their cosmic or magical rules. They are individuals, and they have distinct individual personalities, even if we were to look at the Geddi as a whole, I don't know that you would necessarily call them individuals as such. So I think that the things that we can take from Bahamasamdi are not so much, you know, the top hat and the skull face and the sunglasses and whatever, but the ideas of having a deity whose personality would seem to be at odds with their cosmic rule, and also the idea of having this little cloud of other deities that surround a main deity and act as a kind of Greek chorus. Again, there are examples of this in role-playing games, most representatively in, of course, Glorantha, where Orlanth has that essentially chorus, his sons, the Thunder Brothers, except for a period in the 2000s, very seldom individualized, right? They're just Orlanth's guys. A chieftain needs a retinue, and so when Orlanth turns up, the Thunder Brothers are with him. And the only one who really has a distinct personality is Vinga, because she's the Thunder Brother who's not some kind of roistering meathead. And if you're a turbo nerd from a particular generation, you know that there's Finnevin and Headcaranth and Helimact and Desenborth and Rigsdahl and whoever. But ultimately, they're just the Thunder Brothers. So that idea of having like a lower tier of divine beings who can act as backup or be sent as messengers or appear in out-of-the-way places to give you cryptic information, etc., etc., I think that that's very handy as well. For a fantasy deity, we can take that inspiration from Bahamasamdi. All right, that's all the Haitian Loa that I have time to talk about today. In our next episode, we're going to be taking a look at two more of the most famous Loa from Haitian voodoo as we take a look at the goddess of love, Ezli, and the god of war, Ogun. And both of those can come with pretty hefty question marks, because just like all the other Loa, they are actually much more complex and individual than that. So I hope that you will join me then for Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.